You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we still don't support Cam Newton as the Patriots quarterback, even though he just led a game-winning drive against the Arizona Cardinals. I'm your host, Justin Emelzeski, and we usually record these episodes on Sundays, and especially in the fall, that means that I am coming off of freshly watching a Patriots game. Anyone who's followed football at all this season knows that things are a little bit frustrating as Patriots fans. There's this whole narrative battle or battle of narratives over whether Cam Newton is a good player or not. I fall into the camp that he's not, and I think that the people who are promoting a narrative and they're not actually dealing with reality itself. And that's a very interesting thing watching the games, because with Brady and Belichick, when you're winning, it's very easy to just look at reality and deal with reality because you say, okay, we won, moving on. But when you lose, there is more of a battle of narratives. There's more of a battle of, well, why did we lose? What's the issue here? And this reminds me of back in the day, way back in 2013, when Man of Steel came out. And every time I saw the movie, I would have one reaction, and then I would go and read and hear and see the conversations people were having about the movie, which gave me a completely different perception. And it's the same thing with Cam Newton this season. I watch him play, and I have one very specific impression, and then I see what people are saying about him, I hear what people are saying about him, and I have a completely different impression. So it's interesting the way narratives alter perceptions of reality, or perhaps my perception of reality is skewed. But also for me, it's interesting that the interaction with the reality itself actually isn't that challenging, right? It's not great to watch the Patriots lose. It's not great to watch Cam Newton play. But it's nowhere near as bad as listening to what people say about Cam Newton and about the Patriots losing. And just in the same way where it was very enjoyable to watch Man of Steel, but it was never interesting to hear and see what people said about Man of Steel and Zack Snyder. And we've seen how that's perpetuated since, all the way to the year 2020. We've seen what happened with that. So an ongoing thing to put on our back burner of our thoughts, how these things happen, right? Why we pay attention to narrative here in the midside, why we witness the farce here, because the farce grows, it grows, and then it becomes something else entirely. And that's just sort of what's been going through my head lately in regards to that. But we have more specific things to talk about, more immediate things to talk about with farce this week. So before we get on to that, let me bring in my co-host. Joining me this trip from Dale's Lawn, identifying as a woman to forgo his white male gay privilege, William Green.
Hello, hello. Yeah, we had a great Thanksgiving here. The deep fried turkey turned out excellent. There was football consumed. Adult beverages were mixed and consumed. And pies were baked and consumed. So we're going for consumerism for Thanksgiving, and I think we achieved our goal.
Did you follow the instructions? I don't know if you saw them. At one point, there was like a PSA or a graphic online about how to properly fry your turkey. Like, don't do it inside. Don't drop it from a certain height. Make sure there are only X number of people around.
No, I didn't see that.
I should have sent it to you when I saw
some of those protocols. Yeah, I probably broke some of those protocols.
Well, I'm sure you did.
We had a bit of drama right before Thanksgiving started, which we'll get into on Life on the Midside. But overall, it went pretty good. I had one person that was feeling under the weather that couldn't attend, but other than that, we watched Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back at some point. The fire was going in the fireplace.
Wait. You had one person who had COVID, so you're all infected, and you watched the oppressive, sexist,
no,
patriarchal.
I don't think that person has COVID, but they didn't come in contact with us. So unless they gave us COVID somehow through through deep fried turkey. I don't think that would have.
Well, worked. I heard if you had Thanksgiving, you spread COVID.
That's what I heard too. So we had a super spreader event, and it was successful.
I think we should talk about
that. I think the only thing that spread in a super fashion was Colt's dog hair.
No one ever talks about that. The super spreading of pet hair. That's not too interesting.
Well, Colt's definitely a super spreader.
All right. Why don't we talk about the more interesting thing, your super spreader event, or the relation to the rest of your life with what happened with the attempt to stop spreading things in Life on the Midside. Take a good look around. Does life really suck? Are we just complaining? I hope that this mic is on. Because I'm on a roll here. I hope this is making some sense. I hope that you'll throw up your hands and sing it and tell all the haters that they should just shut up and smile. Yeah. As always, if you would like to support us, you can do so through Patreon or Locals. Patreon is per episode. Locals is per month. Patreon.com/the mid, or that works. Yeah. Patreon.com/the midside, themidside.com/Patreon or themidside.com/locals. We always support any and we always appreciate any and all support. It doesn't matter how little it is. It means the world to us, even if you just want to give us support in the form of affirmations. Last time I said that on the show, a bunch of people messaged me affirmations, and I was like, I know you guys are trying to be funny, but this is actually pretty cool. I feel pretty good about this right now. So now I'm about to get a whole other bunch of affirmations. But no, we do appreciate, and William appreciates affirmations as well, so send some his way. Before we get into William and his business in the city of Long Beach, and then, you know, our weekly ranting about COVID-19. This has really become the COVID-19 podcast, I think, William. I don't know if that's good or bad, but I just want to say that I've opened up the nominations for the 2020 Midside Awards. We'll be giving those at some point over the next few weeks. It'll probably be the week. We'll probably record it on the 21st, I believe, is that Sunday. So the 22nd will probably be the Midside Awards show, the season ending show, because then I'll be going to California for a week or two for Christmas. And then, you know, we'll take our typical
if
break.
If we allow you in.
If they allow me in.
You're from one of those. Yeah. Well, you're from one of those dirty states.
Oh, so. That's true. I'm a dirty Floridian. It's our flow is dirty here in the South. Huh? So they may not let me in. So then maybe we'll have an extra episode, but you know, either the 21st or the 28th, most likely the 21st, we'll have our award show. So I've opened up the nominations for those. Those, of course, you know, we have the awards for the Romantic Manifestation Award. We have the Tom Brady Greatness in the Face of Doubters. We have the Zack Snyder Awesomeness Award. We have the John Rawls trophy for advancement of a batshit crazy ideology. I think a lot of these awards will be swept this year, especially because for the farce award, the peak farce award, right? There will never be peak farce, but what was the peak farce for this year? Usually I put in all the news stories, but honestly, I think there are only two news stories that warrant even nomination, and you guys get to choose between those two this year. William, I think it's either got to be COVID-19 or the election. What do you think?
Yeah, it's definitely one or the other.
I guess maybe we could add in the riots. Could those be the third possible one? But I don't think that's as farcical.
The peaceful protest? Yeah. Yeah, the peaceful protest.
I don't think that's
the whole meme of CNN standing in front of the mostly peaceful protest while the buildings are burning in the background.
Right, I guess we could say it mostly peaceful protest. But even then, I feel bad kind of calling that as farcical as COVID-19 and the presidential election, especially COVID-19, because there is like a kernel, there is like an underlying issue, right, with police brutality and, you know, just the state stepping on people. With those protests, you know, we can disagree with, you know, the communist ends they're going for. And I use that word very serious, the collectivistic ends. But at least like there's somewhat of a serious issue underneath there. Right. But with COVID-19, it's not even the same.
Yeah, it makes sense.
So I'm going to put that up. If you go to themidside.com/awards, that'll go to the SurveyMonkey survey and you can, you know, participate in that. Let us know what you think. And then we'll, you know, whatever you all vote for the Peak Farce Awards, We'll nominate that last, or we'll reveal that last, and then we'll take your nominations under advisement for who we pick for the other awards. Now, for our weekly COVID-19 discussion, William, I know that I was shocked when you texted me this week. You texted me Wednesday. What was it, Wednesday night? Well, it was Wednesday night for me, right? So it must have been like 7 o'clock my time. So I'm like in Florida hanging out in Naples. I went to the beach, right? I'm having a grand old time. There's no, like, you know, there's basic regulations where even if most people are not even caring. I was an anti-masker for the week. Remember we talked about that last episode? Yes, so I'm walking around. I'm basically not wearing a mask all week, right? My only concern with the mask is my employment at this point and the possible harming of other people. And what I mean by that is if I don't wear a mask and somebody is exposed to me, or I'm exposed to someone, sorry, and then I'm around other people without a mask, they can all be quarantined by the school. So it's not even an issue of like my job being lost at that point. It's, am I going to get the entire wrestling team quarantined by accident for the stand? And I think this is why they're you know, getting a lot of people to go along with it. Cause is it even worth it? Is it worth the social protest at this point? That's what I'm weighing in my head right now. But for the week, who gave a shit, right? Nobody's going to know. Nobody at the school is going to know. Yeah. So I basically was walking around without a mask on the beach. If I walked into a restaurant, like I didn't care. I mean, one point, right? Staying in my family's condo, you know, it's old people, right? My cousin's, you know, not that old, right? He's in his 40s, late 40s. But all the people there on the board and everything on the condo are old. So I'm not wearing a mask. Everyone in my family is. We get in the elevator and we're standing there. And, you know, statistically, every time you go in the elevator, you never run into other people. So I didn't have a mask on. Yeah. And then it stops on one of the floors. And I'm like, oh, great. And two old people get on and they don't have their masks on. And they're all nice to me. They have a conversation and then they get off. And then my cousin's girlfriend is like, yeah, they're on the board. I'm like, okay, well, they didn't have a mask on and they were nice to me, so they clearly didn't have a problem. So the whole thing's stupid. So I'm having a grand old time, and then I get a text from you on Wednesday, and you tell me the most insane thing that I possibly could have heard.
Yeah, so a little bit of context. So Long Beach, the city of Long Beach in sunny California, has its own health department, much like Pasadena in California. That means that they can choose their own way whether to follow the county guidelines or to come up with their own guidelines. Well, earlier in, I guess in last week, the LA County decided to close outdoor dining and service pickup service indoors. So this is after much expense has been in the restaurant industry, especially among fine dining restaurants, to, you know, invest in outdoor tents and outdoor seating and heaters for outside, partitions for tables outside, partitions for tables inside, all sorts of things, air filters, you know, $20,000, $30,000 air filters and things like this, right? So after all this investment, the LA County said, nope. And then when asked, like, well, why are you picking on restaurants? Like, what is there been contact tracing, like showing that restaurants are spreading to customers or anything like that? And the answer, of course, was no. There's been no data to indicate that this is a thing. A very loose CDC study saying that people who visited restaurants were more likely to have transmitted COVID-19. But that's, you know, were they following any guidelines? Were the restaurants following, like, nothing? It was very a loose sort of association. Sort of saying, like, people who take risks in general also, you know, have things associated with that risk. So it was very, very associated.
It is shown statistically, William, that people who play football games, some of them lose the games. So nobody should be allowed to play football games because losing is bad.
Well, I mean, your risk of dying from in an airplane crash is greatly reduced by never getting into an airplane. So
that's some John Madden logic right there.
But anyway, so the restaurant associations in LA County were perturbed, but at least Long Beach had basically said, no, we're not making any changes at this time. But lo and behold, that was just because they were waiting to spring it on us at 3 o'clock on the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, before anyone could do anything. They decided that outdoor dining service is no longer authorized, that at all. You cannot allow customers into the store to order or pick up items. And so obviously that meant, a little bit of scrambling on our part, to figure this out. Like, what are we going to do? Do we run a big Ethernet cord and put the cash register outside? Like, what do we do? And thankfully we were going to be closed on Thanksgiving anyways, but Justin, as I pointed out in our thread, who's the hardest hit here? It's the fine dining restaurants. Imagine having all these reservations. This is the time of year that you make your money as a fine dining restaurant, right? For someone like me, a more quick serve restaurant, this is sort of a slow time, right? No major, people come to Long Beach for the Christmas spirit, right? Like, it's like, that's not, tourism is generally not high in Long Beach during.
Nobody's during ordering foot-long submarine sandwiches on Thanksgiving.
So the fine dining restaurants are basically like fucked, and they were fucked. They could not host anything, any of the reservations they had on Thanksgiving because of the order just like suddenly sprung on them. So that sucked pretty bad. I mean, some of the order is basically that you can't do basically anything between 10 p.m. and 5 a.m. Obviously only establishments that operate as drive-through, curbside, door side, or other outdoor pickup and delivery between the hours of 10 p.m. and 5 a.m. And then the same restrictions between 5 a.m. and 10 p.m. So, just suddenly sprung on us. It was exciting. What do you think of that, Justin?
So what was your reaction? It didn't really affect you because you're closed Thanksgiving Day, but you had to figure out what to do for the Friday after Thanksgiving, correct?
Exactly.
Did you do the Ethernet cord out to the sidewalk?
So here's the thing we realized on Friday. Starbucks wasn't making any changes, so we decided we weren't going to make any changes. At least not yet. And the reason why is no one from enforcement is going to be around till Monday. Think about it.
That makes sense.
Justin used to work for the government.
Yes.
Who's in Thanksgiving Day, the Friday after Thanksgiving, Saturday, Sunday?
No one.
Is anyone around?
No one's even going to be back that Monday, dude. And if they are, they're not going to do any work. They're just going to check their email for the day and say that's their work.
And the other indicator was we have the Long Beach Police Department is close by, and we love helping them out, especially during the riots. We were able to help feed them and stuff like that. Good partners with folks in many different groups of the community, but especially the Long Beach Police Department. A bunch of them came in on Friday for lunchtime and all came inside and ordered. So we're just like, okay, well, I guess if they don't care, we'll wait and see till the health department gives us the guidelines. Because here's the thing, Justin, for clarity, you're supposed to, because we don't really actually know what to do other than it was clear to close the outdoor, which we did. But there's a lot of questions like, if I set up outside and take orders outside, I'm also supposed to have the door closed, right? For sanitation reasons, right? So there's tons of things to navigate, right? But the helpline, of course, that you're supposed to call, guess what was closed on Friday?
Well, of course.
The helpline, because it's holiday.
Right.
So we're just like, okay, well, whatever. People will figure it out. We'll see what Starbucks and, In-N-Out did change their stuff, but none of the other stores, the big chains were really making any major changes. So we're like, okay, well, we just sort of will wait until, because we're just we are a national chain, but we're individually owned, right? So if the national chains that are national owned are doing, we basically will follow their lead, right? They have more lawyers than us.
Right.
Our lawyers, we jokingly call Eric Cartman because his name is suspiciously close to that. So if we only have Eric Cartman, and that's all we have. We don't have our armies of compliance lawyers. So we'll see how they comply, and then we'll follow suit.
Your lawyer always uses the "you're breaking my balls" defense.
Yeah, exactly.
If anyone remembers that episode of South Park, "you're breaking my balls, Long Beach. You're breaking my balls, Newsom. You're breaking my balls." And that's the thing, right? So I have two reactions. The first is the logistical conversation we just had, right? It's just like, okay, well, that doesn't really change much for me as a sandwich shop owner. I can just put someone on the outside on the curb with like a table or like a podium and just have them write down orders or even text orders to the people on the inside. And then they can just run the sub out and they can hand it to the person and the person can hand cash or cards and they can run inside and and pay. Like, you already have an establishment. If I'm running a sub shop, I already have an establishment where people are standing.
And certainly
there.
Not to minimize it too much. It does affect our labor, right? Because now I have to have an extra person.
Right. Well, no, 100%.
Normally on the weekend, I could have three people, but if I'm going to have someone outside being registered all the time, I can't be someone new, right? Because it's complicated. Running back and forth, keeping all the orders straight, taking orders, for operating the restaurant, everything else. It's got to be a more, you know, more senior person. I got to have four at least.
Right. And that's the problem is immediately it is my integrity as a human being, as a man, that makes me try to solve the problems. But for, you know, a little inside baseball here, that's way too Dagny and Atlas Shrugged. I shouldn't be trying to make this work here, which goes to my second reaction. My second reaction is they have to be trying to fuck you on purpose. They have to be. It's either that or these people are so fucking corrupt that they don't understand what the problem is right now. I mean, it's the same thing. Gavin Newsom had a tweet on Saturday. Today is Small Business Saturday. California is home to over 4 million small businesses. This holiday season, shop safe and shop local to help support our economy and the over 7 million workers that keep our small businesses going. What, you mean all the businesses that you're shutting down?
I have one thought on this. Yeah, go. I have one thought on this. Do you know what it is?
What? Exactly. I could not think of a better use of that drop. Thank you.
Thank you.
That is perfect. That is perfect. I mean, dude, he's either completely tone deaf or he's a true believer and he really believes that he's saving these people's lives.
I mean, you read the order because I posted to you. That was just Appendix H of the order that I sent to you, Justin. They changed everything, right? Like nail salons closed, by appointment only for hair, nothing that requires you to remove your mask. No pedicures, like basically everything in the service industry, they just fucked, right?
Yes, and that's why I think ultimately Starbucks made the right decision. You made the right decision. I know people who run these, I mean, I don't know them personally, but I've heard of people who run these nail salons and these hair salons are staying open underground. They're just not advertising and saying they're open. They're saying they're closed, but they're staying open for two reasons. One, they literally would not be able to survive if they closed. And two, William, you said it yourself with the police force there. Who's actually legitimately going to enforce this? Who's actually a good human being? And two,
who even knows what to enforce?
Exactly. That's exactly what I was going to say.
Like, how am I supposed to comply with this?
Right. If you don't know what's going on, you're not going to tell me the police have any idea what's going on. And you're not going to tell me they're going to be able to enforce all of this.
Yeah, just not to be pedantic, but my business license does not include me conducting sales on the sidewalk, right?
Yes.
Like, I have to do it in my business. So we're already skirting the law here, right? What are we supposed to do? Are they only supposed to order online on our app? I don't know.
And this
I
is
don't
the
know,
ultimate problem, right? William, with this kind of government and this style of approach to things. The ultimate problem is it becomes that they can just arbitrarily shut you down for any reason because it makes things safe.
Yep.
I mean, this I think...
We're 100% safe if we're all 100% dead.
Right. Well, and that's why this is ultimately a death morality, right? Because the logical conclusion of this is death. I mean, I've said this from the beginning. They want us to believe everyone else is a risk to us. And I think it's best reflected this ad I saw from the state of Washington that the governor put out from the state of Washington about what to do during the holiday, during Thanksgiving.
COVID-19 can find you here when you're just trying to celebrate. It can find you here when you're with your closest friends. Or even here, when you're spending time with family. Wear a mask. Stay 6 feet apart. Don't host gatherings, even in your own home. Protect the people you love.
The first thing is, they must be operating off of old information. There has to be a lag. People are not able to adapt on the fly. Because this whole idea, like the whole commercial is built on the visual of, hey, here's a happy person. Oh, and then it smash cuts to a matching shot, except they're on a ventilator in a hospital bed. and only one of the three people they show is old, right? This isn't even happening anymore, right? Hospitalization rates are down. Dr. Drew talks about it all the time, that people are going to hospitals more now, but that's because they know how to treat them proactively. So that's why deaths are down as well. So that whole thing is completely false. But then the thing that's crazy about this to me, William, and I don't know if you had the same emotional reaction to me, it's like, stay 6 feet apart, don't host gatherings, even in your own home. I thought, and correct me if I'm wrong, I thought this country was built upon the idea that you can do whatever you want in your own home.
Well, you can't pass COVID between people in your own home. So therefore, we can tell you what to do in your own home.
Right. Now, obviously, you can't do things like murder people in your own home, right? So where is the line of what you can do in your own home and what you can't?
Well, murdering is violating the rights of other people.
Right.
You can't consent to that.
Aren't they trying to make this, though, that? Aren't they trying to make this that you're violating the rights of other people by unintentionally infecting them with a disease with a 99.7 survival rate?
Yeah. I think that is the goal here. I mean, I was having a discussion with my friend Alex, who's in town, and we were talking about how, he was like, well, eventually this, the vaccine will get out and all this other stuff. And I said, well, and he said things will improve, right? We'll be able to get back to normal. He wants to hear someone say, okay, now we can get back to normal. And I said, that's not going to happen because the goalposts have moved. Remember, the original justification here was to straighten, flatten the curve, right?
2 weeks to flatten a curve. It'll take 2 weeks to flatten a curve.
And that goalpost has been moved so many times that no one remembers what the goalpost is now. Is it to stop infections? Is it to save grandma? Or in this case, the commercial grandpa holding the turkey?
It's what I just said, William, because I said this from the beginning. If you remember, I said this in either February or March. I said from the beginning, this was the goal of this was to make us believe other people were implicitly, and I'm using that word very intentionally, implicitly, unintentionally a threat to us. That was the goal. This goes back to the phrase Hillary Clinton used in 2016, implicit bias. They want us to believe we are not in control of ourselves, so they have to control us.
Yeah. Yeah, that is very true. I mean, we're forgetting the whole purpose of government here is to protect rights. And I don't know, Justin, you posted to me a nice libertarian view on this.
Wow, you're doing the transition for me, William. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Yeah, there was
I've been upgraded. I'm almost co-host by now.
Yeah, dude, this article, like, so anyone who doesn't know, anyone newer listener to the show, anyone who doesn't remember, I went to Clemson University. Our former co-host Daniel T. Richards did as well. And while we were there, we were able to spend time learning informally. The Clemson Institute for the Study of Capitalism. There are formal things, right? They have influence on the curriculum of Clemson University, mainly for the undergrads. We were in the English department, though. But we did things like we interacted with Dr. Eric Daniels, who worked there, and he's working there again now. And the guy who leads the institute, the professor who leads the institute, Dr. Bradley Thompson. And Dr. Thompson is an expert on revolutionary colonial thought in America, and specifically James Madison. And he writes tremendous things. He's recently joined Twitter. I've retweeted some of his articles, and he recently started a Substack. I don't even what's Substack, William.
Think of it as like a subscription blog, and it's a way to support writers so that they can work on more long-term sort of like writing projects, and you can get updates and it's basically getting uncensored. A lot of people use it so that they can put their uncensored thoughts, and it's only for people who you can post things that are public, but only for people who actually pay to be there. So it tends to be a community that's less hostile than, let's say, Twitter.
Wait, he pays to be on it?
No, people pay to support the content creator.
Oh, okay. So
no advertising. It's not advertising supported.
Okay, right. I didn't know that. Maybe I'll support him financially. I'm subscribed, and he sends me through Substack. He emails me his articles. They go right to my inbox.
Yeah. Yep, and that's it's basically an email list like that, and there can be different membership options and things like that.
So he probably hasn't figured out how to set that up yet. So
maybe, or if he wants the audience, you know, to be just donation only, that's an option as well.
I'll text Eric Daniels and figure out what's going on, because he never even talks about the donations or anything. So I don't know if he's even aware of that. Maybe that's in his long term plan. I don't know, but we can figure that out. The point is, though, if you want to subscribe to him, you can do that. You can get it directly to your email. If you don't want to, you know, follow him on Twitter and he posts the links on Twitter and everything, you can get it direct to your email. It's awesome. And he had this great article, which is my favorite thing he has ever written. Because when I was there and I was learning from him, something he talked about and something I became aware of was the general welfare clause in the Constitution and the wording of that, you know, the idea of the general welfare, the common good, is something the left uses to expand the power of government. Because they say that is the purpose of, you know, if that they're saying in there, the government should protect the common good, the general welfare. Well, all of these things are under that. Think of COVID-19, for example. It would be under the federal government's right to protect us, right? It would be under their powers in the Constitution to protect us against the general welfare, the common good. So if we're all threats to each other, William, don't they have the right to control us and tell us what to do because they're protecting the common good and the general welfare?
Yeah, that would be the left's argument.
And that's the basic argument from it. And I always thought, okay, I get that. That you have to admit, that's a pretty good way of trying to use the Constitution towards the end you're looking for. So this article, it's called The Constitution and the Common Good, and it talks about what that phrase actually means, what the common good actually means, the general welfare actually means. And he looks at it through the lens of James Madison. You know, he was one of the authors of the Federalist Papers. And I just think this is absolutely brilliant. And there's a paragraph I want to read from the article. Madison's 10th Federalist Essay, again, the Federalist Essays, for those who aren't familiar, these are a series of essays among the founding fathers where they were debating what the powers of the federal government should be. Right? Think about Hamilton, but the actual documents rather than it through the lens of Lin-Manuel Miranda. Right. Rather than through the lens of a big government supporting person in the entertainment industry, these are the actual debates they were having. Madison's 10th Federalist Essay provides the fullest and clearest discussion of the founders' notion of the common or public good. The Virginian clearly equates the public good in this essay with the protection of individual minority rights. The problem, however, is that the rival political, religious, and economic factions compete with one another for political power in order to force their view of the common good on the rest of society. This is the definition of majority tyranny. The ultimate result of common good politics is the attempt of some ruling elite or majority faction to force on every citizen the same opinions, the same passions, and the same interests, as was done in all classical and Christian republics. So that quote, every citizen, the same opinions, the same passions, the same interests, that's from Madison directly. I think, William, that this definition of the common or public good is so great and is exactly the one that we need to start saying. This is, I think, the perfect answer to our conversation about not wanting to discuss politics anymore. All you have to say is this. Whenever anyone starts talking about, oh, the common good, the public good, all you have to say is, the common good is the protection of individual minority rights. Done. Conversation over. You don't need to discuss all this bullshit they say.
Yeah, I think understanding this whole article, it goes into a lot of detail about like the reaction and the Brutus's reaction, things like that. And it's this misunderstanding of what the framers meant by common good and the recognition, even back in the time of the framing, that this could be misused and was misused by people to justify tyranny. I know I pulled a different quote that really hits home for me what we were saying earlier about, you know, what is the purpose of government? and you know, what is, you know, getting back to even the arbitrary regulations, the ever-changing fluid situation that is going on in, with the health department here in California. And now quoting from the article, neither the Declaration of Independence nor the Constitution of the United States give government the direct and positive power to form the souls of men, other than to make them free to become self-governing and self-reliant individuals. To repeat, the sole purpose of government, according to the Declaration, is to secure each individual's inalienable right of nature, not to make men virtuous, good, or pious. Limited ends require limited means. In a free society, individuals will become virtuous by virtue of being free. Freedom is the nursery of moral virtue, and necessity is the spur of character formation. And that is the other side of that coin, Justin, that people are running around with this religious fervor about COVID, about social justice, and not remembering that it's freedom that matters, right? What would a individual rights expect society do in the face of something like this? Well, they certainly wouldn't have government mandates about this stuff. People would be shouting from the rooftops, persuading people to take certain actions, and letting people respond in innovative ways. And that's not what we see here, right? All the restaurants that came up with all these ways of protecting their patrons and their employees from COVID, that's not good enough. Some bureaucrat knows better and is weighing the risk for everyone and arbitrarily deciding what rules will go into effect when, and do they base it on data or not? Who knows, right? When asked why, can you provide some data? No, don't need to.
Right, don't need to. That's the key phrase there. Don't need to. And I would certainly recommend this entire article. I would recommend this entire article if you really want to study this and understand and see such a well-written. I don't see this from anywhere. And this is one of the great things about Dr. Thompson, that I wish he would be more of a public figure and a public intellectual. Maybe we can help bring him there, because I don't see this approach taken to it anywhere, because everything you're saying is very well taken, William, which is why I think the definition of the public good, the common good, is the protection of individual minority rights, is the best way to distill this down. Because this, what you said, responds to what you've always been saying, where you're saying social justice is like religion, and the left has become like the right used to be. And that's because, William, and what you just pointed out, what the quote you just pointed out is, you can either have individual rights in a focus on freedom or individualism, or it will necessarily become religion. It will necessarily become, here is the right way of being for everyone, and that must be enforced upon everyone. It must be assumed, and you become morally virtuous by acting the way we tell you. Because the only alternative to that is, well, you figure out what is good for you and good for your life and how that works within the context of your life. And if you lose the respect for that, the only possible alternative is this religious fervor. So it will only ever be, no matter if the format is Puritanism, right? Dr. Thompson talks about that in a previous essay, and we've talked about that before, right? I mean, we can call it Catholicism, we can call it Christianity, we can call it Puritanism. Whether it's Puritanism on the right, whether it's evangelical Christianity on the right, or whether it's social justice on the left, or whatever happens in the future, the battle will always be between individualism and some sort of religious fervor. Now, this is also why I am more okay with a religion that's based upon some sort of reality than a religion that's based upon subjectivism, the way social justice is. Because at least if there are people who believe there's a reality, I can argue with them about whether that reality comes from God or not. Whereas a religion that's based on subjectivism, I can't have a conversation with them at all. Because it's just, well, this is whatever whoever thinks, this is whatever the majority thinks, so this is what has to happen. All right, so any final thoughts on this issue before we move on to you reviewing a show here in the Hopeful Romantic?
No, let's do it.
All right, I'll just say check out that article, right? Find Dr. Thompson on Twitter. You can find the Clemson Institute for Study of Capitalism through Google. Check out that article. It's called The Constitution, the Common Good. I'm also going to put it on the midside.com/podcast. You can find it under the episode notes for this list. For now, let's head into The Hopeful Romantic with JML. Put me into syndication. Broadcast to a network station of people viewing their favorite episodes. I can't find a new pitch to throw the studio. I need a rerun to better cast the next series of events. In the air timeline lapse, my made-for-TV type was written off. In the last season when I wasn't focused on. Again, we had some good conversation in Discord this week, so if you want to continue the conversation from the show during the week, you can do so by joining our Discord channel at themidside.com/podcast. Just click on any episode link, and then you can click our Join Discord invite list that's there. A comment from Lucid Fitzpatrick, he said, side note on masks, now that it's frigid in Chicago, I've actually been glad to have a mask when stuck outside for an extended period of time. I'm opting more and more to use a gaiter as they're scientifically proven to be worse than nothing in terms of passing disease. I mean, look, it's always been when it's cold outside, you wear those masks, right? When you go skiing, you wear a mask. I don't think it's as much as a controversial thing in a cold climate. I think it's more of a controversial thing in a warm climate. But these are all great conversations to have. And we have it in Discord. We look at the context more in Discord, right? Here, this show is more William and I sharing our experiences and me ranting generally. But go get in the Discord. Share your experience. Let's bring that to the show. And we're talking about that. I'm going to take a step back, and I'm not going to do a review this week. William posted, I believe, was it in the Discord you posted that you really wanted to talk about?
Yeah, it's in the Discord.
His Dark Materials season 2. So the floor is yours, William. This is the show. Look, there's so much content, William. There is so much content that I'm probably never going to watch the show. There's a lot of shows I'm not going to watch. So this is, I want to hear your perspective.
This is my chance to convince you.
Right.
Yeah, it's my chance to convince you. So His Dark Materials is an HBO original based on a trilogy of books by Philip Pullman. It's set in a parallel universe, and through the course, with some minor spoilers, through the course of the novel, you begin to realize that that universe is connected to our own and other universes. And season 2 is now available, where I think we're on episode 2 or 3. I think 3 is just coming out right now. And season 1 was well received. The production value is high. The visuals are quite good. The adaptation is pretty faithful. We have some great acting talent too in this. Ruth Wilson as Mrs. Coulter, one of the bad guys, sort of in the show, really at the beginning here in season 2. Is really starting to, as one reviewer put it, use ordinary objects to demonstrate pure evil. And without giving things away, I would definitely agree with that. In a secondary role as Lee Scoresby, we have Lin-Manuel Miranda, who's doing an excellent job as well acting. But the main actor here, of course, is Lyra, the titular main character from the books, Daphne Keene, who I know some people find her a little annoying, but Lyra, the character, is a little annoying. So I think that means success. She's definitely coming of age and is becomes less annoying through the books as she sort of grows up. The other main character, Will Perry, who's from our world, Amir Wilson, has been really the first two episodes really coming into his own as well. As someone who is probably like 12, 13, just about to hit, the main throes of sort of puberty, which is kind of a plot point in the books. So reasons to watch this show. This is good sci-fi. The books are not that old. I think it was written in like the early 2000s. It does deal with some religion. There's religion in here, and certainly when we get to season 3, we'll be talking about some of the allegorical aspects of it. But in the way they put together this show, you're learning about the world as sort of the characters are learning about the world, and that can work. And because they've done such a good job with the visuals and the special effects, you really feel like these worlds exist and that these things are real in the world, which is something I was worried about when they said they were going to bring this to the little screen. Season one got a bunch of awards, mostly BAFTA since it's made in Britain. But I'm assuming that we're going to see, knowing what the cliffhanger for season two will be because of the cliffhanger in book two. We've got some epic battles coming up. And so really looking forward to following the series along. Why not to watch this? Well, it is, it might seem a little bit of Harry Potter vibes in a way. There's some, mild magical things going on here. That being said, it is not young adult fiction. There are things that happen in this, you know, that aren't for young adults, though, you know, the authors said that when they wrote the books, they didn't have young adults in mind at all. There's just a general audience. But you can definitely tell there's some more adult themes in this than something like that. So, but if you're worried about those sort of things, or you kind of like, especially the first season can kind of feel a little young adult because the main character is younger, maybe that's not for you. Music is good. Visuals are good. It's a good sci-fi plot. There's a lot of, it deals with dark matter and sort of the mysteries of dark matter. And as far as the deeper philosophical things it has to talk about, it really talks about the role of sort of fate and destiny and freedom of choice and the fall, sort of like the eating of the apple sort of story. So it is kind of a religious story in that way. So that would be another reason necessarily if you didn't like that sort of thing. But there's tons to get out of this. And you know my thirst for sci-fi. This is actually good sci-fi with no social justice. So and it's quite enjoyable.
Well, I think if you're going to deal with the themes of fate and free will, I think it'd be tough not to have that story without thematically having something related to the role of religion or the role of the story of the fall of man, of the apple, Adam and Eve, mm-hmm. or however that's manifested in other religions, because really a lot of the reasons those stories were created were for man to deal with the fact that he has the responsibility of free will, the responsibility of choice, and how those choices often go wrong, especially if you're acting emotionalist or you're acting irrationally. So I think if you're going to tell that story, you have to have those sort of things. So I think that speaks well of the story. My question for you is, based upon everything you said a lot of great stuff, especially the stuff at the end where you're like, sci-fi without social justice. That's hard to find these days. My sci-fi author friend on Twitter often shows the stories that are, you know, really considered a big deal, the authors that are considered a big deal, and they're just like super social justice stuff nowadays. So that's a big thing. My question, though, is, can you just give like a brief, very brief, like 1 to 2 sentences about what the plot of this is, basically? Like, who is
sure?
Who
so
are the, who is his him. His who is him? What are his dark materials? What does any of that mean?
Well, that is a big spoiler. But what I will say is that season one is the story of Lyra in the alternative Oxford. Her Oxford, she would tell you. We're in the alternative.
So this is a parallel universe. Oxford.
Yep. Okay. The world is controlled by a religious order, much like the Catholic Church, called the Magisterium.
Okay.
And
so the Ministry of Magic. All right. So Harry Potter ripoff. Yeah. You were right.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah. But it's very religious. It's more like the Inquisition.
Yes.
Right.
Okay.
She is the only girl at the all male Oxford College.
Okay.
Okay.
And they don't go social
she's
justice.
But she's just being raised by the professors there because her father is famous and left her there to go on adventures. Okay. And she doesn't know who her mother is. And through plot actions, one of her friends, who's a kitchen boy, gets it's kind of medievally in that way. The kitchen boy gets kidnapped and she sets off to find him. And adventure ensues. And the again, with little spoilers, we find out her father is involved in this magic research that's not allowed by the the church, this heresy. And in order to prove this heresy, he does the unthinkable and he splits a window at the North Pole between our world, or a world, not necessarily our world, a world and their world. And now this window is open, and that's the climax of the first season.
So this kind of sounds like what the Man in the High Castle purported to be.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah. And I'm going to spoil something. I'm just guessing here, but I'm usually pretty good with this. I'm going to bet that Ruth Wilson's character, Miss Coulter, is actually her mother.
All right. Well, you'll have to watch and find out.
That is a yes, Justin. You nailed that. So there you go, ladies and gentlemen. I spoiled the show for you. This sounds interesting. I probably won't have time.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am not a genius.
That is an incorrect
being
use
humble.
Of that drop.
Thanks, Justin. No, you're just being humble.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, look, this you've made a good case for this. You have a pretty good track record with The Expanse, so... If I ever get a chance, this is...
Oh, well, yeah. And let me set expectations. I think the third season, the third book, is the weakest of this. Like, many authors, sometimes you struggle to have a good impact for the third, for the final act, right? And so the first two seasons, I'm going to guess, are going to be the best. The third will have the most interesting visuals, but the conclusion of the story, I'm hoping they kind of spice it up a bit, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. And I will say this. So. This will be the most complimentary you will ever hear me be of Joss Whedon. If you look at what he did with Buffy specifically, he ended each season differently, which caused each season to start differently, which caused him to have an actual ending that was impactful. And he knew where he was going. And I think that a lot of people, you know, we've talked about on here before, I think planners versus pantsers is what we talked about. A lot of people don't plan out enough. They don't know where it's going. And I believe very strongly, this is something I teach my students, know your point A and your point B. Where are you starting people? Where are you ending up? You don't necessarily have to know how you're going to get there, but you should know where you're going to go and where the ending is going to be. That's how you can have an impactful third act. That's how you can have an impactful ending.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we've talked about something that's already out. We reviewed it. Let's talk about things that are going to be coming out. Every week on Saturday, this one was a little later on Saturday, but on Saturday I post 3 to 4 trailers that we are going to talk about on the episode. We're going to review them. If you go to themidside.com or themidside.com/podcast, you can see those 4 trailers under Trailer Takedown. If you want to, you can watch them before the episode, you can watch them after the episode, or you can watch them during the episode. You can watch a trailer, we talk about it, you watch the next trailer, we talk about it, etc., etc.
Trailer Takedown. First trailer.
The Boss Baby Family Business is the sequel to the 2007 DreamWorks animated success hit. I don't know if it was a hit, but it was Alec Baldwin as a baby who was not only sentient. So we took the premise of Look Who's Talking, not that babies aren't sentient, but sentient and capable of adult communication, and was a businessman. This is the sequel to that, where that baby and his brother are grown up, and the brother has a daughter who's now a boss baby. I'm very confused at all this, though, because I remember Daniel reviewed the whole thing and the baby wasn't actually part of the family or something. And it was like put in there. The baby, he was put in there by like the baby corporation, and they bring the baby corporation back into this. And now there's an evil guy voiced by Jeff Goldblum. This seems very convoluted mythologically for a children's movie. And also, there's an animated series on Netflix, so I don't know how this wraps in. Do we need a Boss Baby cinematic universe? This seems like too much for me. I don't want to support this. I don't want to get involved in this. It's going to take too much energy. Tackle.
I didn't see the first one, and I had no idea what the fuck was going on in this preview. Think of how much information they tried to cram into this preview to even make this make sense, right? And so this was one of those animated, this fell into the trap. DreamWorks falls into it most often, but even our favorite Pixar does this sometimes. Of look at all the movie stars we have doing the voice acting. Come watch our animation, right? What is the story here? What are we learning here? Are we fighting against evil corporations? I don't even know what are we doing here other than we're going to say some funny things and we have voice actors that you might recognize. So watch this. And then, yeah, just like you said, do we need a cinematic universe? And then after I give my verdict, Justin, I want to know, is this one of those movies that's going to the streaming services instead of being released? Because I never heard of Peacock Kids before. But either way, I'm not going to be Peacock Kidsing this at all. So I'm going to tackle.
Tackle.
I think they're leaving it up to whatever happens, because it says spring and it says in theaters and streaming. So I think, you know, based upon we saw this with Mulan, we see Wonder Woman is doing both. You know, on December 25th, it's theaters and it's streaming. So I think a lot of services right now are trying to figure out the way, a lot of distributors right now are trying to figure out the way to maximize the profits on these. And I think they're leaving it up in the open where they'd like to release it in theaters because that's where you're going to maximize it. That's the old model. But they don't know what's going to happen right now because we're all at the mercy of the Gavin Newsoms of the world right now. And speaking of...
Second trailer.
Mr. Mayor is a Tina Fey comedy sitcom on... I don't know why I said comedy sitcom, but it's a sitcom on NBC. It's upcoming, and it's about Ted Danson, who runs for the mayor of Los Angeles in order to impress his daughter, make his daughter love him. Now, this is what I'll say about this. I think this is perfect casting for Ted Danson. I think he nails this role 100%. And I think the only other person who probably could have played a role like this is Ed Begley Jr. I think he could have done just as well. So there's potential here that Ted Danson wins a fuckload of Emmys and his performance is worth watching for itself. That it doesn't really matter what the content of the show is. Now, Tina Fey, at times, has brilliant social commentary in her comedy. Mean Girls is a perfect example of it. But Mean Girls was based on a sociological book. So will she be able to do that, or will it go more the route of 30 Rock? I would expect it to go more the route of 30 Rock. However, this trailer did have a few jokes and a few visuals that showed it's really going to be poking fun at Los Angeles. And if the general public goes the way it's going... And Tina Fey is honest on a level. And I do think Tina Fey is kind of in the middle, right? I don't think she's like super corrupt like a lot of these Hollywood people are. Mainly because she has this status where she's always seen herself as an outcast and seen herself as an ugly duckling. I think this show has potential. I mean, the scene where the assistant asks Ted Danson or calls Ted Danson's daughter his wife when they're talking. And he says, oh, I'm sorry, it's confusing. This is Los Angeles. That's very funny. And then on the bus when it's a crowded bus and like this homeless person starts arguing with Ted Danson and is like, I'm the mayor. And Ted Danson's like, no, I'm actually the mayor. And then they start yelling mayor fight. I thought that was very funny. And that was, to me, that was Los Angeles. That was a comedic take on Los Angeles. So for me, I am going to give this a very, very, very tentative hug. I will give this a chance.
Hug.
All right. So, you know, me and comedy, we have a hit or miss relationship. I have only one thing to add to what you said, which is the third laugh that got me. So those I laughed at both those that you just said. The third laugh I got was when whoever was saying, oh, so you just only ran to, you know, improve or help your relationship with your daughter. And the daughter's like, why are we living in this crappy house? Which also hit as LA to me. It's like, there's no house. Even the mayor can't live in a good house in LA because there's no good houses in LA.
Nobody in LA is actually impressed by anything in LA. It's They are perpetually, intentionally unimpressed.
So if this is going to make fun of LA, it might be something I can watch on the background while I'm doing laundry. So I think this is a Netflix and hug for me.
Netflix and hug. Third trailer.
Our Friend is a drama comedy. I don't really know. Starring Jason Segel and Casey Affleck, where the two of them are best friends. Casey Affleck is married, and then Casey Affleck's wife gets cancer. And then Jason Segel decides to move in with them to help take care of their family, even though he has a wife at home. His wife at home gets mad at him. And if this all sounds pedantic to you, that's about as pedantic as this trailer seemed to me. I will say this about the movie. Usually these movies seem much more naturalistic in the sense that they're dour and depressed and it's all about how the world
you know, especially with diseases, is against you. But this one seemed to actually be like, okay, here's a real struggle, but here's people trying to do good and trying to be happy, and there's a love and warmth among these people. You may find that valuable watching. I prefer much more exaggerated premises. This doesn't do anything for me. Jason Segel looks like he could be funny in this. He's a funny guy. But for me, this is not my cup of tea, as benevolent as it looks like it's intending to be. Tackle.
Yeah, I would love to see Jason Segel in more stuff, but this just looks so utterly boring. There's no way I could sit through this. Sorry.
Tackle. Final trailer.
Little Fish is about a couple in a world where there's a pandemic that causes people to lose their memories. In it, the husband loses his memory, and it gets it's called NIA or whatever, and he starts losing his memory, and the wife has to, you know, help him. Now, how is this different from the last one? To me, this is different from Our Friend because it's taking that whole idea of sickness and it's making it more interesting. It's saying, you know, okay, what if the sickness isn't, you know, just cancer like is in real world, but what if it's this disease that's similar to COVID-19, but it affects us in a different way, and how does it affect people's lives? So there's that interesting edge to it that makes it more sci-fi to me, that makes it more appealing to me. The other positive thing about this trailer to me is the main actress, Olivia Cooke. She is so underrated, and I don't know why she doesn't get any more roles. She was in Bates Motel, and she was phenomenal in Bates Motel, and anything else she's been in, I've paid attention to because she is so, so talented. And even in this trailer, I watched this trailer and I go, this is an Oscar-winning actress. She has the capability of winning an Oscar. She's elevating this material. I don't know if this material is good or not, but based on her performance, she's elevating it. Now, my hesitance about this movie is it looks like they could have edited the trailer to make it more exciting than it is, and it looks like this could be a very slow, more naturalistic approach, even though it's a sci-fi premise. So the last movie sort of had a naturalistic premise. Our Friend had a naturalistic premise, but it was done in a more benevolent, romantic way. This looks like it could possibly be a more romantic premise, but be done in a more naturalistic way. So I'd have to see more about it in order to figure that out. And that makes me willing to give it a chance, provided there's nothing else released around the time it comes out. So this would be one of those movies where it's on my radar. I like the actress. That's enough to get me in the theater. The premise, the actress are enough to get me in the theater, but it also depends on what's coming out around the time that this movie is released in theaters. So tentative hug.
Hug.
Wasn't very tentative, but
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, I go. Well, I'd already picked. So the only thing I'll add to what you said was on the aspect of the sci-fi premise, it seems like it's going to say interesting things about the role of memory in shaping who people are and what they remember.
You can't forget, they say you can't forget a feeling. I found that line particularly compelling. What's the difference between, can you feel things if you don't remember things? Right. Yeah. Very interesting.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. And so just for that alone, you know, my hunger for sci-fi, I will give it a try. So I'm going to hug this.
Hug.
And again, to emphasize, Olivia Cooke, guys, check out Bates Motel. It's one of the best shows that's come out in a long time. It's a little old at this point, a few years old, but it's a phenomenal show. And Olivia Cooke, really, she's one of the best young actresses out there, and I hope she has a long career. So check her out. Check her out both ways. She's kind of cute. All right, William, that brings us to the end of our trip in the mid-side here. What did you learn?
You have a little man crush on Olivia Cooke. Justin, what did you learn this trip?
A man crush? She's a woman, so wouldn't that just be a crush?
I guess.
Way to stall. I think I relearned. No, I just didn't see how she was a man crush. I just think I relearned how brilliant Dr. Thompson is. Like, I can't emphasize that enough. Like, he's just a very, very smart man. As always, I want to thank everyone for joining us here on the Midside. it makes this show much more enjoyable when you all listen, when you engage with us. It's very gratifying, and it's gratifying that there are other people out there who want to witness the farce the same way we do. As always, thank you to our Liberty.me listeners. I have a lot of sympathies. Everyone knows that I have a lot of sympathies with libertarians. And there was actually, I wanted to read it on the show. I forgot about it this week, but I don't know if I can find it right off the top of my head. I'll throw it in Discord. There was actually a tweet I saw this week that said, and this goes back to the whole idea of, William, this goes back to the whole idea of we're threats to each other. The idea of not wearing a mask, the idea of not social distancing, to not going with the government mandates is the violation of the non-aggression principles for the non-aggression principles for libertarians, which is very similar
because
to the
of course it is.
The initiation of force, right? They would argue that, you know, yeah. wearing a mask is the initiation of force against other people. So I have sympathies with libertarians, but then again, how do you have such wide interpretations there? But that's what we're here in the Midside about, to talk about those things. So libertarians, love you guys. If you want to support us, you can do so at themidside.com/store, or you can pick up my novel, The Cut, at themidside.com/thecut. You can read all about it there. You can get Kindle version. You can get any other e-reader version, PDF. You can get signed copies, themidside.com/cut. As always, if you want to support us by episode, you can do so at Patreon, or you can do so, support us per month at Locals, themidside.com/Patreon, themidside.com/Locals. And if you know more people who want to witness the farce with us, who share our sense of life, who are ready to move on to the common good, I'm stalling here, the protection of individual minority rights. I thought it was protection. I wanted to make sure I got it right. If you know more people who believe that and live that way, tell them about the show. Tell a friend about the show. This is how we start to save this culture. This is how we start to battle back, and we get back to the roots of not what makes good American culture, what makes good human culture. And it was just America was the first ever country to get the closest to that. This concludes your journey into the Midside. I'm Justin M. Lesneski, reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a freedom-loving day. So, Justin, I can say this because it'll be after the fact, but I actually have people over right now watching the football game outside. We set a TV up outside. We're watching all the football games today. Not sure I'm allowed under the current COVID restrictions.
Wow. Which game are you watching?
I don't know because I'm up here recording a podcast, but we were watching Red Zone and switching back between Red Zone and the Patriots game.
Ah, well, one brief football update before we let everyone go. The Broncos' two quarterbacks are not allowed to play due to COVID-19. So they have a practice squad wide receiver in at quarterback. At halftime, he is 0-for-7 and one interception.
Yikes.